Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We stay the course. We are dead. We are all dead.
We're supposed to make the world a better place. Well,
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I know kung fu.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane. This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
This whole thing is insane.
Man is evil, capable of nothing but destruction.
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert. Of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator?
It's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Happy heresies, and welcome to the desert of the real. Welcome to Aeon Byte. Welcome to that dream of you, that ship smoke on the horizon. We don't take prisoners, but liberate them. And I hope you are writing your own gospel and living your own myth. We're running with those searching for the truth and avoiding those who have found it. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your host and pompadas of Gnosis. And so good to see everybody on this Mercury day. And I see already a lot of people going in the chat, and good to see everybody. And I hope you're dealing as best as you can with our simulation. And today I am very excited to be joined by an individual whose book, as we were talking about, should have already been out, and why didn't somebody think about it? And that is the Illustrated Field Guide to DMT Entities. And trust me, this is a book you'll need. This is like having a towel if you're out in space, a la Hitchhikers of the Galaxy. It's something you're going to need if you're ever in those liminal spaces between reality and the other side. And that is, our guest is David J. Brown. David, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Miguel. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm excited to talk to everyone.
Pleasure is all ours. Yes. And unfortunately, the book is co-authored with Sarah Finn Huntley. And as you told us, Sarah unfortunately had some Ishkar issues and she won't be joining us. So you'll just, but we're sure you can handle the Gnosis today, David.
I'm sorry that she's not going to be able to join us too. It's hopefully we can do it again in the future with her. But I'm sure I can do my best.
I hope so, too. And with us, too, we've got Graham Pong. Graham, how are you doing today? And thanks for being here, too.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Looking forward into hearing some more in depth in the Kabbalah. I've done a few preliminary explorations, but I want to hear from an expert. Thanks, David.
Indeed. And for the audience, if you have any questions, for David. Please super chat them so we can get to them. And if you have any complaints against me, please super chat them too. I'm always here to handle. Keep the customer satisfied, as Simon and Garfunkel sang. But other than that, let's get into it. Well, David, tell us how you came to write with Sarah DMT Entities.
Yeah, that book was about 10 or 12 years in the making. The idea for the book came to Sarah and I maybe around 12 years ago when we were having a psychedelic experience together in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And, we were thinking about how interesting it was that so many of the reports that people had, come back with from their DMT experiences of entity contact, which is very, very common on a DMT experience, were so similar that there was so many common entities, which seemed just a little bit too unusual to just be a coincidence. So, we were thinking at the time, wouldn't it be wonderful to put together a book, of these entities? We were thinking of those nature field guides that I used to love as a kid, the Golden Guide to Reptiles and Amphibians, or the Golden Guide to, non-flowering plants. I used to collect them all. I had the whole set and I loved them. And we thought, because Sarah's a really wonderful artist, and I've loved her artwork for years. And we were thinking, she could illustrate the entities, and I can write descriptions of them. And we talked about doing this for years. At the time when we came up with this idea, DMT was still, a pretty obscure psychedelic. And over the last, last decade or so, it's just become, so much more popular. So many more people, have been experimenting with it. The internet is now overflowing with reports, and so many people have been claiming contact with these entities that people experience in hyperspace, or the realms that they travel to on DMT. And so we thought it was finally high time, no pun intended, to put this book together. And that's what we worked on for the past couple of years. And, like we were saying before in the, before we got started here, that, we knew if we didn't do it, somebody else was going to do this soon. This book was just waiting in the ether for someone to grab it. So we were happy that we were honored that we were the ones that were able to do it. And we're thrilled that it's finally manifested itself in physical form.
Yeah, so am I. Again, it's so useful. And again, it's not just describing these figures, these beings that we meet, these intelligences, but you break. There's so much science in it. There's so much philosophy. Again, you record so many of the visions of people and how they encounter these beings, whether it's people describing them in Reddit to Joe Rogan to other psychedelic experiences. You leave no stone unturned. So it's something that anybody who does this can relate to if they've had one of those experiences, which I have had, of course, with Santo Daime doing ayahuasca. So, of course, I could relate and see what was going on. And great advice. So I guess the question is, what would you say? I have never tried DMT, David. Again, I've done ayahuasca with Santo Daime. Of course, you deal with it in the book. And how Mestre Ireneo met this lady. People say the Virgin Mary, but it was, when you look at the real story, it was just a goddess type being. And, and I've done, of course, I've seen many of these beings when I was astral traveling on the other side, and I've shared with them with groups and so forth. But what would you say is the difference between doing DMT and ayahuasca?
Yeah, well, as you know, ayahuasca contains a DMT. Right. And an MAO inhibitor that makes it not only orally active, but slows down the experience and makes it much more digestible. A DMT experience only lasts generally 5 or 10 minutes. The body metabolizes the chemical very, very quickly. And, an ayahuasca experience will last 4 to 6 hours. So that's one of the major differences, is that it's slowed down and it's less intense. The other real major difference is that if you do enough pure DMT, there's a certain threshold that you reach that I don't know it's possible with ayahuasca. with ayahuasca, you sort of keep at least one foot kind of in this world. When you open your eyes, you can still see the room that you're in. When you do a breakthrough dose of DMT, you are truly no longer in this world. You pass through like a membrane or a bubble where you are entirely in that world where the entities reside. And you look around and you're there. And it's like being in a lucid dream or, you know, completely in another world. And for those 5 or 10 minutes, you are truly somewhere else. And there's no way you can even relate to the physical world that you left behind. But the experience is much more digestible. And people generally get a lot more out of ayahuasca than they do out of a DMT experience. A DMT experience, pure DMT, is, you know, like a wild journey adventure into this other realm. And it's over very quickly, even though it can actually feel like hours or days that you're there in those 5 or 10 minutes. But there's a lot of similarities. If you don't do a breakthrough dose of you know, DMT, it's actually very similar to like a 5 or 10 minute ayahuasca experience.
No, it makes sense. And just for the record, in the book, you focus on NNDMT and not so much on 5-MeO DMT, right?
Yeah, that's an important distinction for it to make, because people often use just the acronym DMT interchangeably sometimes. And it's interesting that the experiences with NNDMT and 5-MeO DMT are almost polar opposites. You know, it's so interesting that the NNDMT experience that we discuss in the book and we're talking about today is one where there's just a multitude of imagery where you just see the entire cosmos and entities, and you know, and the 5-MeO DMT experience is one where you basically enter a non-dual void. Almost precisely the opposite of the experience, even though there's kind of an underlying similarity in the state that's hard to describe, but visually and conceptually, it's almost on opposite ends of the pole.
Well, yeah, good distinction to make. And also, again, your book is very visual. There's all types of designs. Tell us about some of the artists who contributed their visions of going through these realms.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we really relied on for the book, because a lot of what goes on in a DMT experience is hard to put into language. So we really relied on visionary artists to be able to capture it. About half of the artwork in the book was done by my beloved friend, Sarah Finn Huntley, who I co-wrote the book with. And she illustrated every one of the entities in the book, did several of each of the entities. And then we also had, Luke Brown join us, Alex Gray, Allison Gray, Harry Pack, and around 50 or 60 other artists who joined the book, whose work is truly spectacular. There's almost illustrations on about every other page in the book. So it's a really visual feast to be able to look through.
Yeah, for those of you who'd rather have some visuals, there are plenty of it, just as there's plenty of very interesting text. And also, too, in the book, and I know it's a controversial subject, and that is of AI art. I know Sarah uses it. And again, that's why on purpose, David, that the beginning of you saw this show, that was at least the visuals were AI, and my wife and a collaborator, we created a tarot deck, but it was different. We used a mixture of rituals, AI, Photoshop, sketches, and all that, and people are like, well, it's AI, but I feel, and let me know if you and Sarah agree, that I think one of the aspects that are people are missing about AI is that, as somebody said, it's almost like it's a white noise mirror that if you send your prompts, will send images and ideas back to you. It's interactive. It's different. And it's like tarot. It's a great way of understanding yourself. You send the information back and it sends it back to you. And that's what we did. We kept like playing with it, both with rituals and prompts and words. And the images became an extension, not just of the Gnostic Gospels, but the Gnostic journey. So is that how Sarah uses AI again?
I really wish Sarah was here today to explain this herself. But people might get the wrong idea if they think it was AI, just AI art, because she used AI as a way to create foundation. But then she used Photoshop and all types of other mediums to create the artwork in the book. And much of the other, you know, artwork throughout the book is done in all different types of mediums, everything from drawing to painting, you know, to and the AI work that, you know, that Sarah was doing. She talked about how she was able to sort of get into the collective unconscious of humanity by going back and forth, just as you're describing. You know, there's a dialogue that's created between you and the AI, and the AI has access to, you know, all of humanity's visions. So she used that as sort of a foundation to create some of the art in the book, and then would, you know, use that as a springboard to then, you know, with Photoshop and other mediums to be able to create the artwork.
Exactly. I think the way she does it, it's the way I've been using it and others have been using it. It's another divination, self-awareness tool to get into, for lack of better words, the collective unconscious and your own unconscious too, to work it out. So I think that's one very good way to look at AI. And why don't we get to, we have some visuals. Of course, we want to show them later on that Sarah provided before the interview, and we will show them. But let's get to the million-dollar question, or I guess today you could call it the carton of eggs question, because it's very valuable and expensive. But are these entities real? That's what curious minds want to know.
Yeah, that is the big question, right? You know, I mean, that I've been wondering about that for decades, you know, ever since I had my first experience. And that was the question that I asked everybody that I interviewed for the book. You know, what were their thoughts on, you know, is there an independent reality where these beings actually exist? Or are we just, you know, dealing with complex hallucinations that are projections of our own minds somehow? You know, I don't have a fixed opinion on that. I mean, it's something that I wonder about. Some of the people that I interviewed were very convinced of its reality. Rick Straussman told me that he tried all types of other, you know, models to explain the phenomena, and the best model that fit was that there is a reality, you know, to these beings. You know, I've really thought about it a lot. I think about it all the time. But you know, what basically my opinion on it is that, you know, they are in some sense, you know, creations of our own mind, but our mind may not be limited to our brains. You know, it may be that our minds expand, you know, farther out into a collective transpersonal type of realm, and that these beings, you know, exist in that realm, you know, of mind, but not inside of our brains, which is why so many people can access the same types of entities, which was the cornerstone of being able to do the book.
Yeah, exactly. And you give varied ideas on how they see things. And I think it's important that we change our thinking, because, again, we still sort of stuck in the linear, you know, cause and effect world where I see you, David, and we talk. And I think they are real, but it's more of an interactive symbiotic sort of experience. You know, we give them energy, but they give us energy, and we exist in different times and places outside of time and space. And at the end of the day, don't we will always cloak them in our cultural context and where we are too in our lives.
Exactly. And you know, also, it may be a question that really is never going to be answered. You know, because I mean, how do I know that you're a conscious entity? I mean, how do I know that, you know, that you're really, you know, that I'm not projecting consciousness onto you? I'm just making an assumption, really. You know, it's really a leap of faith, because the only consciousness that I know is my own, really. And that's the only consciousness I really can ever know is my own. So, I mean, the fact that even other people have consciousness is something that we can only, you know, we can only assume, you know, based upon our experience, you know, with them. So, I mean, I assume that you're conscious. I assume that all other people are conscious. And when you're dealing with these entities, there's a sense that they are realer than real. They're at least as real as other people. So your experience with them leads you to assume that they're conscious, and they seem to know things about us that we don't seem to know ourselves. They seem to know us better than we know ourselves, and they seem to be able to impart information to us that, you know, that we don't have inside of our brains. So, you know, everything that we attribute and other people to, you know, having a separate consciousness and an independently, you know, an independent reality, you can attribute to these beings. They pass all the criteria for having an independent being, you know, being an independent being.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right now, you and I are just pixels. We're alone in our respective rooms. Yeah, we see each other. We're talking to each other. And we assume we're real. But the truth is, we're just digital pixels at the moment. So if an alien came by, they'd see Miguel or David talking to themselves in a room and be like, what's wrong with these people? And what advice have they given in your life? I know there's one part of the book you talk about how you met the goddess Bast or Sekhmet, the Egyptian deity. Wasn't that one of your great encounters? Or is that Sarah? Yeah.
I think you're referring to a dream that I had.
Oh, it was a dream. I thought
there was a dream that I had when I was in Israel where I encountered Bastet, the cat-headed Egyptian goddess. It was a very powerful dream where I was sitting in an auditorium with this stone statue of a goddess on the stage that came to life and was going to take the lives of one of the people that was in the room that we were in, and these beams shot out of its eyes and someone passed over and died, and when I woke up from this dream, I mean, I was just like sweating, and it was so powerful. And I then, you know, just learned a couple of weeks later, I saw, you know, photographs in a book of Bastet. I had never seen Bastet before. So that was an encounter that I had. And then there were many other synchronicities with that experience over the years. But that's also, it's very, very common on DMT experiences for people to encounter Egyptian goddesses or goddesses from different cultures, in different religions. You know, Jesus and the Virgin Mary are encountered, and Hindu deities, all these different types of, and even people encounter them, even people who have not had any previous experience with the religion or with the mythology from which they're known. So they sometimes, just like myself with my dream, they discover it later on, you know, like, oh, that was the being that I encountered on my DNP trip. You know, that's Cerebus, or that's Kali, or, you know, as many people have reported. So it's a remarkable, you know, confirmation that there's some kind of transpersonal realm that exists independently of us.
Indeed. Yeah. Interesting. It wasn't a dream. I know it was Carl Jung, when asked about entheogens, he always said, I don't bother because the human mind is enough to create and explore these places. So again, and Jung would say, yeah, go to the dreams. If you don't have entheogens around you, the dream is, you're in that realm too, when it comes down to it, right?
Yeah. Well, not only that, the other remarkable thing is that if you have a lucid dream where you become conscious and aware and awake in the dream and understand that you're dreaming while it's actually happening, you can smoke DMT in the dream and it will have a genuine effect. You will go off into DMT hyperspace inside the dream. So the drug itself is not, you know, if it isn't even a drug or neurotransmitter or whatever it is not even necessary really for the experience. Your brain seems to have the capacity to do it on its own. It was Terrence McKenna who first told me this. And then I tried it myself in a lucid dream. And sure enough, you have the full-blown DMT experience inside the dream without, you know, ever having to vaporize or do the drug itself.
Or get thrown in jail.
Yeah, exactly. Get thrown in jail for a chemical that naturally occurs, you know, in our own brains. Everybody's carrying around DMT in their body right now as we speak. You know, that's why I said I'm not really sure the drug is the correct term for it, whether it's really a neurotransmitter or a hormone, or plays, you know, some kind of role in our body. I mean, DMT is found not only in our bodies, but in the bodies of all animals. It's found in almost every plant, all throughout nature. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's in every glass of orange juice that you drink. There's trace amounts of it. You know, and no biochemist can tell you what function it serves in the body. It's this profound mystery. And yet if you increase, the DMT threshold in your brain or in your body, you find yourself in the most remarkable journey into hyperspace, encountering these strange entities. It's a absolutely profound mystery.
Agreed. And you mentioned hyperspace. How would you describe hyperspace? Some might not even know. I think it's Terence McKenna. That's his neologism, or whatever they call it.
Yeah, is he the one who coined that? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I didn't know that. Well, hyperspace basically means a space with more than three dimensions. It basically means a hyperspatial space where there's four dimensions, five dimensions, or multiple dimensions. That's the incredible thing about the realm that you go to on with DMT, is that it's very hard to describe in words, but everybody comes back with this feeling that, well, it's three-dimensional for sure, but it has more than three dimensions. And it's you can see from many perspectives at once. You can see 360 degrees at once in the realm that you enter. But basically, hyperspace is the word that people use to describe the realm that you break through when you do a threshold dose of DMT. Most people say it's three large, inhalations, about 40 milligrams of DMT. When you ingest that amount, you break through into this other reality. And that other reality or realm is what people call hyperspace. And that's where the entities reside. And it's normally perceived as a kind of, almost like a technological space. There seem to be machines and technology there. Mm-hmm. The walls are crawling with geometric hallucinations, patterns. I don't know if hallucinations is the right word, but you see imagery, all over the walls of this place. And there's a feeling of almost being underground, like you're in a large cavern. And it's populated with entities, all different types of entities that are eager to communicate with you.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. When I did ayahuasca, all the times I've done ayahuasca, yeah, there's this digital sense, psychedelic. I would say digital, almost high tech. It's very strange. Even if I saw visions of animals or ancient beings, there's this, a digital sense to it, like very modern, don't you think? It's like eerie.
Or futuristic is really.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
It's almost like I could see the entire structure of the world and it was some sort of digital simulation and things would fall apart. And like you said, the 360, it was, it's unique. It's very unique. Before we get into some of the entities, and I should mention, too, that the book has, again, so many good research from some of the great thinkers on psychedelics and consciousness. Many past guests for Aeon Byte are in the book, like James Hollis, Rick Straussman, Martin Ball, and Duncan Trussell, and so forth. I think I'll be going on his podcast actually soon, probably in the next month or so. So I'm sure we'll talk about that and recovery, because that's what we always talk about. But Graham, do you have a question or remark at this point?
We haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm curious to hear about what connections he was able to make between DMT and entities and mythology. Because I definitely have seen some, like I see connections between like the machine elves and the Kabiri and such. So I'm curious to see if he had anything on that front. Other than that, I'm fascinated and want to hear more.
Yeah, that's my next question. Another big question. What are machine elves, David? That's McKenna.
The self-transforming machine elves is a term that Terence McKenna coined to describe these elf-like entities, small pixie-like entities that would dive in and out of his body, had a very mischievous quality to them, that were able to transform their physical bodies at will. That's a very commonly encountered entity that people describe when they enter this realm. Terence described them as a self-dribbling jeweled basketballs that offer you all these gifts that are like Fabergé eggs that open up, have seemed to, like, in a fractal type way, where they're gifts within gifts, and they seem to be conscious gifts that can replicate themselves and sing. And I mean, it seems impossible what's going on, and it's very, very, difficult to describe in language. But, the term self-transforming machine elves is a term that a lot of people use kind of ubiquitously for all the entities, sometimes not realizing that it was really a specific term for a type of entity. But we describe, there's 25 different entities that we describe in the book, and these were taken from the surveys that were done by Johns Hopkins University, from Rick Straussman's research, from the research done at Imperial College, from the alien abduction reports, which are there's a lot of interesting overlap. UFO contactee reports, things like that, and from the vast amounts of internet reports, as well as our own experience. And some of the different entities that we describe in the book, besides the self-transforming machine elves, are the gray aliens that many people, the quintessential alien. Right. The large almond-shaped black eyes and large heads and, small bodies, with the gray skin that people describe doing experiments on them. And that's also commonly reported in the DMT experience, as are the reptilian entities, which is another overlap. People describe angels and spirit guides. Jesus and the Virgin Mary, your Graham asked about the different, how there's a overlap with different mythologies and religions, which I mentioned earlier, that people describe seeing Hindu gods and goddesses and Egyptian deities, from virtually every different culture on earth, even from cultures that they're not familiar with. And the ayahuasca, people describe, that mother ayahuasca, people describe snakes and jaguars and animal spirits and plant spirits and gnomes and fairies. Octopus entities are another commonly described entity. But what's so interesting is that there's so many reports where there's so much overlap between these entities, where they're described so similarly.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, yeah, very much indeed. Yeah, we want to break a few of these down. There was somebody in a very odd synchronicity. I was just scrolling Facebook, and somebody made a joke, an offhand joke, that what happens when machine elves smoke DMT? Do they see Alex Jones or Joe Rogan? And you remember that Stephen Wright joke, if God does acid, does he see me or does he see humans?
Right. Yes. Yeah, when God does acid, does he see people?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the old joke. Glorious days of comedians back then. So, but do you think I think in one part of your book, do you see the machine elves, perhaps they're guarding a realm? Are they companions or guides? What do you see as their role? Or is it depends how we encounter them? Like, In the ancient Gnostic Gospels, it depended what passwords or magical items, you know, what you brought depended on how they were going to treat you. But what do you think is their role, or this, what does study show?
Yeah, well, the machine elves we describe basically as mischievous or tricksters in the book, and we actually have a whole different section on guardians, which would seem to actually your threshold guardians, so we call them in the book, that seem to be you know, that you don't have to pass a certain type of test. Mm-hmm. Like a, you know, being pure of heart or that sort of thing, you know, that we see in a lot of myths being represented, but it's also commonly encountered during DMT experiences where people encounter these beings. And I don't know that they're the same as the self-transforming machine elves. Sometimes it's hard to differentiate, because it seems like there's a like there's a chameleon-like aspect to these different entities where they, you know, reflect our own cultural, lenses that we project onto them. Like, for example, some people experience demons, you know, or the devil. Mm-hmm. And as their experience change, you know, they can almost transform into angelic, you know, type entities. So the actual, you know, entities may not be as clear cut as, you know, as the reptiles and amphibians in the nature guide. There's like almost a kind of a transformative quality that these beings have.
Exactly. Yeah. I wonder if one will ask you, what's the average speed of a swallow? We know what to answer, right? European or North American to get through.
Right.
But yeah. You would say, and before we get to the tricksters, I think something that has helped me is to understand that, yeah, they may reflect our culture, but they don't have the same morality as we humans have in our specific time and place. They can F us up and they can lie to us. I mean, they're working on a different set of rules, right, David? We have to know this.
Yeah, no question. A different sense of morality and certainly a different sense of humor. They seem to find things hilarious that sometimes are at our expense, but our rule of thumb for dealing with these entities is the same way you deal with strangers or when you meet people for the first time. I mean, don't trust everything that they tell you. I mean, you know, you don't know if they're trying to deceive you. You don't know if they're trying to trick you or play with you. You know, so I mean, you know, trust builds over time. Trust builds, you know, through, you know, repeated interactions with other human beings, and the same with these entities. So be a little bit suspicious, you know, of them. Don't necessarily, you know, because there were some people who the DMT entity said it, so it must be true, you know, kind of thing. And I would definitely advise against that. Treat them like you would any other, and like any other person when you meet them for the first time.
Yeah, trust but verify. And we already have plenty of tales throughout history about meeting fairies and demons in disguise and angels who are not in the up and up, if you know what I mean. They're kind of fallen. So it's all over our mythology. We don't even, it's there. And of course, next I have here the trickster. And of course, I like to say, very often, David, this is the age of Hermes, because we live in a trickster age. When a culture collapses and transforms, the trickster is the archetype that takes us through, whether we like it or not. In Native Americans, the coyote or the changer is the one is like, you're going to change. We've reached a new level of evolution. I'll either destroy you or you can come with me. So, and tricksters are one that meet, and I love, I wrote down some notes that I really like. For example, again, we're going back to McKenna, the OG of psychedelics. He said the archetype of DMT was the circus. Then you quote James Hollis says they are symbolic of the personification of the absolute autonomy of nature that disrupts the flow of daily life. And then Graham Hancock, he suggests shamanistic journeys could be the origin of clowns. So the trickster is important, right?
yes, indeed. I mean, like I said, you know, you don't know when these entities are being straight with you and when they're out to sort of play around with you. But it's extremely common for people to report clowns and jesters and jack-in-the-box type entities. It was reported in Rick Straussman's research quite a bit. Sarah has stories that's one of the reasons she dresses up as a clown sometimes as a result of her encounters with the clown entities. And yet you mentioned Graham Hancock. It's really interesting that, you know, he thinks that it's possible that that it's not that we're seeing clowns in hyperspace because we have clowns here, but the other way around, that the people have had shamanic experiences in the past where they encountered these clown type jester entities, and that we're actually mimicking them. And that's, you know, and that's, you know, the clowns that we have in circuses and the jesters and the royal court, that they're actually mimicking the way these entities look. There's an incredible, striking similarity.
And what would you say, obviously, in mythology, as I was talking about, or even psychology, because a lot of Jungians talk about the trickster archetype, is this, it's an invitation that, A, things are changing, you better change with it, or an invitation that it's time to change. You know, even when Jung was talking about flying saucers, he was talking about, you know, there was a shift from into the nuclear age, and we saw flying saucers, or it became part of our consciousness, because when people in dreams or would have emotional breakthroughs, they would see a circle, a saucer. And a saucer was often associated with Mercury, who again is that trickster, that changing. So would you say, what do you think? A trickster is a good time to change, or what would you say, David?
Well, I think it's interesting that, there's such an incredible similarity between the fairy sightings and the experiences that people talk about being kidnapped by fairies, how similar they are to the current alien abduction phenomena. And many people think that it's really the same phenomena, that the entities have sort of changed form because of our, you know, the development of our technology. And in some sense, what they're doing with these, you know, sort of the hyper technological environments that people encounter on a side of a flying saucer when they're taken aboard and being abducted by aliens, that they're in some sense, it's a parody of what we expect, you know, from our current technological situation, and that they're really the same entities that have been, you know, interacting with us in some kind of symbiotic way, you know, for centuries or you know, for much longer even. And, you know, they change form depending on, you know, our, not only our culture, but, you know, our technological evolution.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. And I guess we're kind of getting to the place of the ultra terrestrials, which seems to just make more sense than, you know, little green men on some moon, although there is good argument for that. But that brings us to somebody who's in your book, who we recently interviewed, and that's Jeff Kripal. I interviewed him for his new book, How to Think Impossibly. And he has a whole chapter on the mantis and the insect creatures, interdimensional creatures, which you deal with it too. And tell us about these little, these beings that we encounter.
Yeah, well, first of all, Jeff Kripal is a genius. I love his work. Is really. I interviewed him as well for my last book, Psychedelics and the Coming Singularity. He's an absolutely brilliant thinker. The mantis beings, that's another really commonly encountered entity. These are beings that are like human-sized praying mantises, and they often usually want to do surgery, brain surgery, or brain adjustments on us. You know, I can describe my own experience. You know, that the first time I ever did DMT and had a breakthrough experience, I found myself, you know, in this hyperspatial realm where there were, you know, beings jumping inside tubular technologies. And as I was looking around, this mantis type entity, this giant praying mantis creature comes over and like pins me down and starts experimenting or running some kind of, you know, fine tuning on my brain where it was doing these experiments to see how my brain was reacting in different ways to this intense type of stimulation, and then making adjustments in my brain. And it's very common for people that have these mantis encounters that they want to do some kind of surgery or refine our nervous systems in some kind of way. And it can be a very frightening experience, but it's also not only in the DMT journeys, but this is also an alien abduction reports. Right. And that's one of the overlaps, you know. So it's strange that there's such an interesting similarity and you know, in so many people's reports about these experiences.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on. I think I like the theory that's in your book, DMT Entities, about, as you were talking, every plant and mammal has DMT, but I think insects don't, right? Because this be maybe some sort of symbolic, like, you know, we can get DMT into these insects. We will have Gaia will be happy, perhaps, or there'll be more of a unification.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a profound mystery. I learned that from reading one of David Luke's books, that it's found throughout nature, and mysteriously it's absent, you know, among insects, and yet so strange that insect-like beings are encountered, you know, in the DMT realm. You know, so it's not only praying mantises, but people encounter bee-like entities is another fairly common one, and other insects have been encountered. So it's very, very strange that the DMT is not found in insects for some reason, and yet we find insects in the DMT realm. There must be some kind of mystery wrapped up in there.
No, it is fascinating. I'm working on a. Just did my bio of Elvis, the occult Elvis. So I'm working on the David Bowie bio. And what many miss is that David Bowie was hugely influential by William Burroughs. And if you know William Burroughs and his Gnostic mythology, who's the big bad guy? The centipedes from Venus. He hated centipedes, and he really thought that these insects were controlling our minds and everything. So William Burroughs, and of course, William Burroughs is no stranger to Mayan and entheogens and visions, but those centipedes were always the bad guys no matter what. So even he saw that.
Yeah, he was one of the first Westerners to actually do ayahuasca.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
And DMT as well, and pure DMT as well, even though he described it as a nightmare drug when he did it. But yeah, the insectoid beings are you know, present throughout Naked Lunch, and it is fascinating how often people report them in their DMT experiences.
Yeah, and he was way ahead of the curve before McKenna and the whole Mayan thing. He doesn't get credit, except he saw the Mayans as the bad guys, the evil archon priests, but he was ahead of his times. I mean, he doesn't get the credit, but again, people like David Bowie just like saw, this is the guy I want to who's going to inform my own space age music and ideas and all that. So speaking with space age, you talk about Jesus. That's a term I hear now all the time. It's not Jesus, but space Jesus. So is this, you say Jesus appears with like as an astronaut or?
That was how one person that we interviewed for the book described it. I think he described it as the space Jesus. And he was a Jesus in kind of a Star Trek kind of a uniform aboard a spaceship. It's interesting. Jesus, the Virgin Mary are encountered, and not always in, you know, typical religious formats. Sometimes they mix with other elements from our culture.
Yeah, space Jesus makes sense. You know, the alien, the man who fell to Earth. It's a trope about, you know, somebody who comes down to give us information and so forth. So,
yeah, I just read an advanced copy of Andrew Gallimore's book, Death by Astonishment, Death by Astonishment, I believe is the title. And there's a wonderful section about, you know, about William Burroughs' adventures with DMT in much more detail than I had ever read before. So that's going to be coming out in July. You know, I highly recommend that.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out because I've done a lot of research on Burroughs because understand how his mythology, I mean, he admitted he was a Gnostic and his mythology jives with ancient Gnosticism, but he's just so fascinating. What's the name of the book?
Death by Astonishment.
Death by Astonishment. All
right. Which, of course, is taken from Terence McKenna's famous quote that, you know, that when he was asked, you know, whether DMT was safe or not, you know, he was, you know, because it's just very physically safe, as you know. But as Terence said, there's always the possibility of death by astonishment.
Interesting. Yeah. And for the audience, if you want to know what Burroughs thought of extraterrestrials, he had an encounter when he was a kid. These aliens came into his room from their spaceship, and they played with his toys. That was traumatic. Not seeing the aliens, but the fact they played with his toys for a kid. So he had it early, very early. His channels were open. So. And yes, with us again, we are discussing DMT Entities, an excellent book with David J. Brown. If you have any questions before we tune off ourselves at the end of the hour, please super chat them. Of course, I can always use your support, subscribe, like, join AB Prime or Patreon, one-time donations. I truly appreciate so we can keep these trips going. And what about ancestors? That's probably an important one, and you never know if it's a trickster. Do people talk about or meet ancestors or loved ones, deceased loved ones?
Yeah, that's another very, very commonly reported type of quote unquote entity is people report people that they've known who died, family members. You know, as you know, it's very common, especially with ayahuasca, that the indigenous people of the Amazon use ayahuasca specifically to communicate with their ancestor spirits. And the word ayahuasca itself, you know, means vine of the dead. Mm-hmm. So it's, I've personally spoke, I haven't had that experience, but I've spoken to many people who have, you know, and how healing it's been to be able to talk to people that they've known who have died. And it, you know, strangely, this ties in with the alien abduction phenomena. You know, there's a lot of people who report that aboard the alien spacecrafts where they're abducted, there are people, you know, people they know who have died. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Whitney Strieber, you know, talks about that in one of
course.
His, where, you know, where he saw somebody that he knew aboard one of the ships and then looked them up and found out they had died 3 months before. So that's another area of interesting overlap.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many, and again, you go through all of these, all the different creatures, mythological of the lizard people. For those of you who are following David Icke, of course, the lizard people make an appearance. They weren't just made out of whole cloth, and yeah, like you mentioned, Hindu gods, fairies, animal guides. There's just it's a busy hyperspace out there, that's for sure. They're going to have to build more cities soon if it keeps getting crowded with these things.
Yeah,
I wanted to show the audience a few of the visuals, if you don't mind. I don't, and maybe you can speak to them because Sarah did send them to me, so I know. But first, Graham, do you have a question or remark?
No, just really enjoying it and following along here, and I need to pick up the book to know more.
There you go. There you go. All right. For the audience, again, here is the cover of DMT Entities. Yeah, right there, it's very eye-catching from the beginning. But and here is looks like a fairy creature. Do you know this picture, David?
Yeah, that's one of the fairies in the book. Yeah.
And then, well, gee, I wonder what that is. Yeah, machine up if I've seen one.
These are the jesters and clown entities that we described are very commonly encountered.
And the artist, I can't see the drawings. I can't see the signature. I'll have to take a look.
Yeah, that one of Sarah's pieces.
Oh, it is Sarah. Wow.
Yeah, that's
amazing. God, she is talented.
Yeah. Oh, Sarah's brilliant.
And she has a vision, and then she recreates it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole process. She spent a lot of time going back and forth and really, really working on it until she gets it right. This is another one of Sarah's. Now these are the self-transforming machine elves, and they're holding one of those hyperspace alien super toys that are like Fabergé eggs that if you open them up, they just seem to have a fractal-like complexity to them, and they just seem to have almost an infinite ability to keep opening up inside themselves with ever increasing complexity.
Wow, we got a lizard people.
Yeah, it's one of the reptilians.
Yeah, it's just good.
Yeah, they're generally not very pleasant to.
Remember the series V? Did you ever watch the original one?
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, okay, yeah, the aliens come and take humans to their planet, but they're actually reptilians who eat us. Very much like the Twilight Zone to serve man.
they're in Star Trek as well. There's also reptilian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Shatner fighting one for a long time for like a whole episode.
this is also one of Sarah's pieces, and this is from a particular experience that she had. I don't believe that's one of the entities in the book. That's from the appendix, where she's describing her encounter with a goddess. A goddess riding a bicycle.
Fascinating.
And this is also another one of from one of Sarah's journeys that she did. And what's really interesting is that's from a vision, a vision or an encounter that she had in the DMT space. And she ended up that costume that the entity is wearing, she recreated it and she performed wearing that costume. She's an amazing performer as well, and she's able to create in almost every different artistic medium, and she does fashion design as well. And one of her most outrageous designs has been to imitate the design of the fashion that the elves and the entities are wearing inside of hyperspace.
Wow, I'm glad they haven't discovered lawyers, because they might be they might be emailing her like, "Hey, all right, we got a mantis here."
Yeah, there's one of the mantis entities for sure.
The
mantis entity that I encountered, it looked like that, except the head on it. It actually had my face on it, and I was doing neuroscience research at the time, and I wondered if it was like trying to show me what it feels like from the point of view of the animals that I was working on, to sort of give me a taste of my own medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, now we got a jaguar. Digital jaguar.
Yeah, very common from the ayahuasca experiences. Shamans are said to transform into jaguars, and vice versa. Jaguars can transform into shamans.
Fascinating. Yeah, well, those are the ones she sent me. And again, this book is replete. There's so many. I know you'll be able to relate. Well, as we get to the end, I just have a couple more questions. Number one, where do you see today the study and usage of DMT? Are we in a good place? Is the research good? I don't even know if it's legal or not. I mean, I've just been, again, I go to another country for ayahuasca, so I have no idea what's going on here. But
there's extraordinary research going on right, with DMT right now. They're doing extended state DMT studies, which, as I mentioned earlier, that only lasts like 5 or 10 minutes because the body metabolizes it so quickly. But, Andrew Gallimore designed a system where it's continuously infused into the body, the same way an anesthetic is infused in the body when people undergo surgery, so that they can stay in that state, for a half an hour, an hour, hours indefinitely, really. And they're carrying out studies at Imperial College in London and Switzerland, in Holland. They're doing extended state DMT studies. They're even doing them here in the United States in Colorado because psychedelics have been legalized basically or decriminalized, so they're able to carry out these studies, and they're doing them in Colorado. They've already done quite a few extended state DMT studies, and the next stage that they're going to be doing at the Imperial College, which is probably undergoing as we're speaking right now, is they're sending people out together. They're sending out people to see if they have shared experiences, wow, if they can link up together in hyperspace. So we can look forward in the future to when people are going to sort of go out in teams, that it won't just be one person going, but there'll be a team of people, and they can stay there indefinitely and have sustained contact with these entities, so that, you know, it's not going to be this rushed, you know, out and back, you know, in 15 minutes, you know, but, you know, you can stay there, and who knows what kind of, you know, fantastic, you know, technologies they might be able to help us design. Are we going to come back with, you know, with the blueprints for starships or time machines or matter transformers or different, you know, I mean, who knows what, you know, these are beings that I think are hundreds or thousands of years more advanced than us. So the secrets that they can share with us are going to be amazing, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I just know ayahuasca. Can DMT be therapeutic? Like in ayahuasca, it's not just the vision, but what happens afterward, the healing, the insights into your trauma and childhood. That's what I think, that's sometimes the best part of it, what happens afterwards.
Yeah, you know, that was the motivation that Rick Straussman had for doing the DMT research. And certainly some people report, you know, healing from traumas from it, but it's not nearly as common as it is with ayahuasca. There's something about ayahuasca that not only slows down the experience and makes it more digestible, but the types of entities that are encountered are often different. You know, with ayahuasca, it's often ancestor spirits or nature spirits or entities that seem anchored to the earth's biosphere, that are somehow a part of our system. And there seems to be a real healing function to ayahuasca. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, I had my most profound healing experiences doing ayahuasca when I was down in Iquitos, and none of my pure DMT experiences even compare to the ayahuasca experiences. So there's something special about mixing it with an MAO inhibitor. And there's even something special about doing it down in the Amazon, I think, that, you know, that people really can't have here. I didn't realize there was such a profound difference until I went down there and did it myself. But the types of entities that people report when they do pure DMT are more like, you know, less earthbound and more like the whole cosmos is, you know, is suddenly opened. And, you know, there's these alien entities from Zeta Reticuli and other star systems, it seems like you're encountering. And there's a much greater variety and often doesn't have that same type of healing potential that we find with ayahuasca.
No, it makes sense. And what advice do you give people who want to do DMT? Again, going back to ayahuasca, I have two rules that I've learned. One, have a good shaman or guide. It's almost just as important as the actual plant. And two, just understand that the plant dictates the agenda. She will tell you what you need to learn, what you need to heal, what you need to see. So don't let your ego get in the way. Just it will reveal to you something wonderful that you have. But what about DMT? What advice do you have for people?
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend much the same thing. I mean, there's certainly an intelligence to the DMT that goes beyond just the entities. It almost seems like the whole experience, there's a sort of a background intelligence that's communicating with you as well. And I think that's very similar to the type of spirit that you encounter with ayahuasca. It's not nearly like, you know, grandmother ayahuasca. It's not nearly the same. But you know, what I would recommend is certainly that people do as much research as possible beforehand, know what to expect, do it with somebody who you know, who has experience with it, and, you know, do it in a situation where you're not going to be interrupted in any way, where you're going to be completely able to, you know, focus on the experience. There's going to be no phone calls, nobody knocking at the door, you know, and go into it with a certain intention. You know, keep a journal and write down your intention when you go into the journey, you know, what you want to discover, what you'd like to learn. And oftentimes that intention can carry over into the experience, just like any other psychedelic or or like a dream when people bring it, you know, intentionally into the experience.
Well said, and good advice. Very good advice. Awesome. Well, we're at the end. I do have both on the show notes your links to your website and Sarah's website, but anywhere you want to send people to purchase your book or more, get to know more about you?
Well, you can purchase the book directly from the Inner Traditions website, which is our publisher, your publisher as well. It's available, you know, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, every major bookseller that you can get it. I would recommend getting it from your favorite bookseller. And for more information about me, you know, you can check out my website, www.davidjbrown.com. Sarah and I both have Instagram and Facebook pages that you can check out. And we're happy to interact with people who send us messages or leave us comments.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. Well, again, it's on the show notes. And I highly recommend this book. Hate to say it, but it's a trip, but it's a good trip and it's a useful trip. Again, it's like taking your towel out into the universe, a la Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Hopefully you can have an astral copy with you when you're out there interacting with the machine elves and those guys. So, but we are at the end. First, I'll say, Graham, thanks for keeping us company and being the wingman today while Vance is at work.
It's my pleasure, as always. And thank you, David. Very fascinating and definitely a book I need to pick up.
Thank you both. This has been a real great pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
I hope so. Yes, maybe we can get Sarah. Really enjoyed it too for everybody. I hope you enjoyed it too. This podcast is out for everybody, but for subscribers, I'll have the mini podcast bonus if you're on Patreon or AB Prime, so you'll get an extra 20-30 minutes summary and discussion about the book. So check it out. Could use your support. And I hope everybody has a good rest of your Mercury day. And if you run into any machine elves or tricksters, well, don't worry. You're going to be fine. You're probably in a good place. Take care, everybody, and we will talk soon.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.